This podcast was recorded prior to a report that the changes are now on pause until the next federal election next year.
This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I am your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. The government is currently considering updating the 22-year-old wholesale investor tests, claiming that they have not kept up with the times. One of the proposed changes, which mulls increasing the thresholds to determine if a person is a wholesale investor or not, could have several ramifications. Joining us today is Jesse Hamilton, the Chief Financial Officer at Wilson Asset Management, bringing some light on these issues. Jesse, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Karen. It's great to be here.
Jesse, what potential changes are the sophisticated or wholesale investor laws currently proposing?
Yeah, great question. So probably over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, the government's been looking at the sophisticated investor test and probably just starting with what that is. Right now, you're deemed to be a sophisticated investor for financial sort of acquisitions purposes if you have $250,000 of income and $2.5 million of net assets in each of the last 2 years. So what the government's currently looking at is, are those the right thresholds? They haven't changed in some time. We'll acknowledge that. But the government's is looking at and sort of consulting with industry at the moment in terms of what should the test be? Should it be increased? Should it be indexed? Should there be any changes to it? And ASIC have come out with their sort of preferred position, which is actually increasing the test to $450,000 of income and at least $4.5 million of assets, which would be a big considerable jump and not something that we agree with at the moment.
Jesse, how will investors and financial services firms offering investments be affected?
From a pure self-interest perspective, we're a fund manager. So as a fund manager, we are in the sophisticated territory. If the tests was to be increased, so if those thresholds that I mentioned were to be increased to the upper limits, for us as a fund manager, sort of as a sort of investor, it actually benefits us. It means that there's less people, fewer people in the pool that are sort of, I guess, competing with us for these opportunities. But as an investor, like, we've long held the view that there's not enough people standing up on behalf of retail shareholders. Now, at the moment, some people who might meet the test sort of won't meet this new threshold that they're currently proposing. But just generally, I guess, splitting a class of investors on the basis of wealth sort of is something I have a problem with. I think there needs to be a knowledge component and an experience component in addition to just wealth. But if we just look at listed markets for a second, and then there's the unlisted market. Obviously, the test plays a role in reducing the regulatory burden of ASIC in terms of, I guess, putting people in a category where they don't need as much regulation and preserving the regulation for the retail shareholders who really do need it. But if you look at listed, so ASX listed companies for a second. Now, at the moment, the sophisticated investor test applies to both listed and unlisted markets.
Yep.
But right now in the listed space, a company, like we have 8 listed investment companies at Wilson Asset Management, I could go out tomorrow and do a placement to sophisticated investors only, so where you can increase your capital by 15%. You can only participate if you're a sophisticated investor. Generally, those placements, not when we conduct them, but generally if a BHP, a Rio, or big ASX 200 companies do a placement to sophisticated investors, it's done at a discount to the market price. It's never done at a premium. I don't think I've seen one done at a premium. It's always done at a discount to the market price. And you have this big pool of retail shareholders that are excluded from participating in this capital raising. So they could already be existing investors and they're excluded from picking up these shares at a discount to the market price. Now, some companies will go on and do a share purchase plan or something where the retail side of the register can participate. That generally happens after the fact, though, and it's not in the same proportion as what the sophisticated investors get the opportunity for and the timing. But those sophisticated investors can sort of pick up those shares at a discount And if you're a retail guy, the very next day when those new shares trade on the market, the sophisticated investor can then sell them to you at a higher price.
Interesting.
So like sort of the framework for the current sort of test when it comes to the listed market, in my mind, doesn't work. When you can have that circumstance where the shares can be issued to one group at a discount and then purchased the very next day by the other group that was excluded at a higher price, clearly the test has broken down when it comes to the listed markets, and I don't feel as though it's fit for purpose anymore. Now, there is the unlisted space where there's a lot less disclosure, and what I mean when it's not fit for purpose for the listed markets, the ASX has some of the strongest continuous disclosure rules in the world. It is highly regulated, sort of everyday companies are accountable to the ASX listing rules. So there's never a circumstance where companies are raising money when material factors haven't been disclosed to the market. And obviously, that's not the same in the unlisted space. And when you get to the unlisted space and you've got sort of some high-risk investments, you could have private equity, venture capital and the likes, there does need to be a level of protection for people who don't understand those investments. But for people who do understand them and don't have the necessary wealth to meet the tests that are being put forward, there needs to be an introduction of a knowledge test. So people that with the relevant experience, with the relevant knowledge, can pass a test to be able to participate in those opportunities. But when you just look at the listed markets, like ideally, there just isn't a test. If you're a listed company, you should be raising money from your share register. And that includes both wholesale and retail investors. There shouldn't be these methods of raising capital where one group's excluded and right the next minute, the other group can then sort of buy those new shares on market.
That's a great explanation. Let's look to our neighbours for a second in New Zealand. So how are we different to the New Zealand shareholders and investing in their exchange, the NZX?
Yeah, like there's not many things I would say New Zealand's better than us at rugby is definitely one of them. But when it comes to the way they've designed their markets, funny enough, they like for their listed markets, they have what Wilson Asset Management has proposed, where there isn't that test between sophisticated and sort of, I guess, the retail market. They say that because of their continuous disclosure regime, that companies raise money from their register. And there isn't that, like, you can't sort of just do a placement and carve out your retail part of the register. And then they also have, like, an experience test and a qualifications test. So if you have the necessary experience and qualifications, you can meet the criteria to participate in other sort of areas of the sort of financial markets.
That's very interesting. You mentioned that the tests are a crude tool, quote unquote. Why so?
I just think separating people on wealth to begin with is something that leads to a dangerous position. And especially when I mentioned that example for listed companies, and I think the number's around $15.7 billion. So since the start of 2020, there was, so I think, $144 billion of capital raisings that were done through placements on the ASX. At an average discount of around 12 to 13%.
Oh, wow.
Which means that there was $15.7 billion that went to sophisticated shareholders to the detriment of retail shareholders.
Interesting.
So when you come down to a test that's purely based off income and assets, I think that's just a crude way to separate a group of investors. Now, there's people that I know, my friends, that don't meet these thresholds, but they have the qualifications, they have the experience to understand these opportunities, yet they're barred from them, they're excluded from them. So fund managers like myself, big industry super funds, like we all get the benefit of these tests, and we're just excluding a group of people that should be able to participate in these offerings.
And Jesse, what do you suggest can make the tests even better or fairer for our investors or the Australian investors?
I think step number one, I think the fact that the current thresholds don't increase year on year is probably something the government needs to address. Now, if that's just simply indexing the existing thresholds by CPI or the wage price index, that's something that I think would be reasonable to begin with. I don't think that we need to go down the path of almost doubling the thresholds like ASIC is proposing.
Mm.
But I think there needs to be generally, when you just look at the test, an introduction for a knowledge and literacy test, something that's run by, could be run by CPA, Chartered Accountants Australia, CAPLAN, CFA. There could be something that they could sort of put forward for people that have the relevant experience, the qualifications, or just the general sort of knowledge that they'd be able to pass that test in order to participate. So that's just generally for like what we think for the, I guess, redefining the current test. But then for listed markets, I think they need to go to the step and say that the sophisticated investor test is not needed for listed capital raisings. Obviously, a fresh IPO, a prospectus, those types of things, you need to have disclosure documents. But for ongoing raisings for existing listed companies, the test should not apply. And that will then lead to companies having to change their behavior and sort of look at their entire register when they're raising money. I saw a company recently that sort of did a $100 million placement at a discount to sophisticated investors and offered a very, very small share purchase plan after the fact to their retail shareholders at the same price. But by that point, the opportunity had disappeared in terms of picking the shares up at the bigger discount that the sophisticated investors were able to participate in. That, in my mind, is a behavior that needs to change in the listed markets to make it fair and just level the playing field for all shareholders.
Absolutely. These are great suggestions, Jesse. Any other final takeaways for our audience listening?
No, I think that's it. Like we're strong advocates at Wilson Asset Management for retail shareholders. We're very happy to stand up and fight on their behalf. And this is one that Jeff has been fighting for a long time on, and myself over the last few years as well. We're very sort of vocal on franking and super changes, but this one has been one that has been at our heart for a long time. It's to our detriment as a fund manager. Having more people participating in capital raisings is not a good thing. It just increases our competition. But we think, and when we talk to our shareholders who manage their own portfolios, they're very active, they're very knowledgeable, but they're not able to participate in capital raisings on the listed market because of this sophisticated investor test. That's just something I think the government needs to address.
Jesse, this has been an excellent conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.